Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill along with Matt Butler. You can't go wrong with this record. You really can't. People say this could be the most perfect record ever made. I'd be hard-pressed to find something that's better. I mean, we can talk like concept albums like Dark Side of the Moon or a rock opera like Tommy. But for just a collection of singles, this album's got to be it. Fleetwood Mac Rumors. Talk about pain and art going hand in hand. What's the meme that says Taylor Swift writes songs about what a-holes her boyfriends are? Stevie Nicks writes songs about what a-hole her boyfriend is and then makes him play guitar on that song. That, my friends, is how you do it. Matt, are you a fan of college basketball? Did you watch the tournament? Are you caught up in March Madness?
I am not. I mean, I'll occasionally enjoy watching college basketball, but I don't get caught up in the fervor the way some people do.
It's nuts in the office, you know, and that's kind of nice. I like when there's community things that bring everybody together outside the regular, you know, parameters of work. You know, last week we were out in the office and this huge cheer goes up. I mean, from over at the MyNorthwest.com section of the office, from the news desk, from the various kiosks around where reporters are following reports, from the sports pit of Seattle Sports Radio, there's this roar goes up, and I'm thinking, oh, and this was right after the U.S. and Russia had that drone thing. I'm like, oh, did we shoot down a Russian plane? Oh, did we, what happened? What happened? Got everybody going like that. Oh, it was Fairleigh Dickinson beating Purdue. Like, oh, that's why the whole office goes nuts. No, we didn't like rescue a baby from a well or take down a Russian spy plane. No, we had a 16 seed beat a 1 seed. I understand. Over 2.6 billion NCAA brackets, official brackets have been filled out. There's office pools. And there's the brackets where you can go on various websites. ESPN's a massive. And people fill out their bracket. And, you know, whoever does the best on predicting all, I think it's 67 games of the NCAA tournament because there's 68 teams, 4 play-in games, and this field of 64. So if everybody, you can only lose once. If there's 68 teams, 67 games, one team never loses. Of the 2.6 between the men's and the women's, no one is alive. No one has a chance at a perfect bracket in the men's. No one. 2 number one seeds are already gone in the tournament. The Sweet 16 has a 15 seed, a 6, a 7, an 8, a 9. Only 2 number ones left in the 16. And no one has a chance at a perfect bracket in the men's tournament. And there's only one in the women's. If a second seed UConn women, if they don't win, no one this year in 2.6 billion tries will have a perfect bracket. I find that just mind-boggling, absolutely mind-boggling. That's what I love about the. I'm not a huge fan either. I'm a peripheral watcher of the tournament. I love watching the end of any game if it's close. The last 2 minutes are really all you need to see. I'm that kind of basketball fan. But when you get like a 15 upsetting a 2 or a 16 upsetting a 1, that's kind of stuff. Those are the teams that aren't supposed to be there. You think about college football's playoff system where 4 teams get in and it's always the same 4 teams. And I understand it's a different beast between basketball and football because you got to play once a week. But you could make it 16 teams. Instead of a 13-game regular season or a 12-game regular season, make it 10. Make some playoffs. Expand the field. You imagine 32 teams played in college football playoffs and a Montana State got a chance to play somebody like a Auburn and knocked them off. That'd be fantastic. Anyway, it's March Madness. I feel kind of guilty. I'm a lacrosse fan. I was born and raised in the Mid-Atlantic where lacrosse is the spring sport, not baseball. And I watched number one play number three this weekend and number three upset number one. My Maryland Terrapins upset number one Virginia in overtime. That's the kind of Saturday I had at home by myself with my dog. Wife's out of town. Matt, I barely put on shorts this weekend. It was a fabulous weekend. Weather was 60-something and sunny outside. I didn't care. I had the TV on. I had food going. It was my dog was got fat on crumbs falling off of me. It was a perfect bachelor weekend for me. So there's a story that came up today, and we got a little bit of a debate on it. And I want to ask you, Matt, what you think of this. When a book is submitted for publication, right, editors and proofreaders will get a chance to look over the book. And proofreaders for grammatical errors, spelling errors, those kind of things. But editors look at content. And because editors know what's going to be a successful literary endeavor. An editor will take a look at your book if it's submitted for publication. Say, you know, you need to cut a little bit of this out. You need to flesh out this part of the story. They're editors. That's what they do. Well, now sensitivity readers will take a look at proposed manuscripts considered for publication to kind of look for where we can find places where we need to be a little woke in the way of authors. In the way of do these particular sentiments need to be in the story? Is the story incomplete or diminished without them? Is it worth the offensive nature of this particular element of your story? And it's up to an author whether they feel strong enough about their manuscript that, no, it's got to stay. It's paramount. And then the publisher can decide whether or not to publish. In some cases, the condition on whether or not to publish a story will be on if they... Because you're putting out a book through, I don't know, Simon Schuster or whatever public Penguin Press, whatever publishing house is putting your book out, and your work, given all of its, you know, foibles and all of its, you know, dangerous passages, reflects on the publishing company. So they've got a right to kind of say, look, if you want to publish in our company, this is what we're going to have you to take out. And we started talking about this, and it seems like, you know, it's a safe ask. To ask an author to edit his work to be considered for publication. I mean, most all works of art that are published to the public have some editing process, and some authors aren't happy. They didn't like this character. They didn't like what you called that guy. I mean, there's books nowadays that are being rewritten from the past because they don't meet today's standard of social acceptance. The Dr. Seuss example, right? When Dr. Seuss is His estate, yeah, because trying to find the right word. I was going to say his foundation, but his estate decided, look, you know, we made these books, Dr. Seuss made these books, some of them in the 30s and 40s. Dr. Seuss drew propaganda cartoons for the U.S. military during World War II, many of which depicted our enemies during World War II, whether they be German, whether they be Japanese, Italians, the Axis of Evil. Drew them in very insulting caricatures of these various groups of people, whether it be ethnicity or race or whatever it was. Some of Dr. Seuss's works had very offensive racial tropes about Africans and natives and all the things. And his estate, Dr. Seuss's estate, dictated that, you know what, moving forward, that was a time when we weren't aware or we weren't conscious of the offense we were making to various groups that we had never been considered, we never considered before. We just did what we wanted to do. And in a sense, that just, we didn't look at them as equals. We didn't bother to take into account whether Chinese would be offended by this caricature or Asians or Africans would be offended by this caricature. Now we're a little more woke. Which I think this is the right definition of woke, a little more empathetic, a little more understanding, a little more respectful.
Well, at least you have a definition of woke, unlike some people who, when asked, pause it for eons, that, eternity even.
Did you see that tape of that conservative writer?
I did.
And I'm not going to bother playing it, but this lady wrote a book on woke, and she says in the book, she says in the interview, she spent a whole chapter defining what woke is. And when pressed by a confrontation.
I somehow doubt the definition in the book is much better.
Probably not. It's probably word salad, talking in circles. But we're not going to debate woke. We have plenty of time. It's going to be the number one issue in the next presidential election. We have so much time to debate woke.
Focusing on the important issues. Voters.
I think that is an important issue. First off, I think it is. I understand your cynicism, Matt. I appreciate the sarcasm. I do. I mean, woke, you know, important issues ought to be economic stability, ought to be equity, ought to be fair justice under the law. Those ought to be the issues that we worry about as humans, as Americans.
Why don't our candidates give us some big picture thinking on why so many in our country are driven to do drugs instead of cutesy little lines like make drugs illegal again? How about we delve into why people do the things that they do and what we can do to maybe make their life a little less miserable?
Right. Or they turn to crime to support their drug habits. The sense of desperation. The sense of hopelessness. Let's address the mental health crisis in this country that's got so many people turning to drugs and then crime to support their drug habits. You're right, though. You're right. Those are the real issues. Those really are the real issues. But let's talk about censorship, I guess, is the only way to really call what I'm talking about here.
I don't think it is. What you're describing isn't censorship. What you're describing is the free market. If these authors don't like the revision suggested by their publisher, they are free to find another publisher or to self-publish in an era which has so many possibilities for that. And the publishing house is equally free to decide, hey, we don't dig this. This isn't what represents our house, our brand, and we don't want to publish it.
You're spot on. I apologize, because when we were talking about earlier today, we had evolved the conversation to the next step, and I skipped the step. Let's talk about books like Tom Sawyer, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, Grapes of Wrath, To Kill a Mockingbird. And those aren't even the real controversial titles. Books that are being considered for rewrite, like Dr. Seuss, like Ian Fleming's James Bond books, which are being considered to be rewritten to take out the misogyny, the unnecessary misogyny. And when we talk about books like The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, we talk about To Kill a Mockingbird, we talk about, you know, Fahrenheit 451, we talk about the list of books that have been banned because it would be inappropriate for students. Now, we're talking about books that have been on the shelves of public libraries and school libraries for literally decades and decades and decades. And we seem to be, as adults, just fine having read books because we have an understanding of context, we have an understanding of history. And should these books be rewritten to be less offensive, more woke? Or should they be pulled all together because they might offend somebody?
Well, you're always going to have somebody publish those books, or they're always going to be out there. You can't purge them from society just because you choose to no longer publish them.
Agreed. But I guess children stop reading when they stop going to school, for the most part.
That's what baffles me about this whole debate. We are arguing over something that few people do anyway. Fewer people read, even fewer of them understand what they read. So why people are so worried about kids being exposed to books is baffling, because they're not.
I don't think we should just give up on asking kids to read, to expand their understanding.
Spike, I was a very well-read child. I was read to a lot. I read a lot, and look where it got me.
Buddy, I'm taking you out for like pizza and something. I don't know where we'll find that something, but you need something. You are, Matt, so far up the food chain on this planet. I don't think you have the right perspective.
I am an evolved human being, but that does me no favors. It only makes it worse.
So, fair. I can't argue with that kind of logic, my friend. I can't argue. I'll tell you what, let's talk about, because I think we're going to talk about this again tomorrow, because we started to get into this world and we didn't have time to cover it. You know, you talk about the market deciding.
Now, right. Why? Seriously, I'm actually in a good mood now. I'm going to ask this question. Why are we so bothered by this when this is the estates, the authors, the review boards, the publishing houses? All of these decisions are being made. Like, it's not the FCC or some government organization saying you can't put this book in a library. It's just a marketplace evolution. Good or bad, it is what it is.
But I'm talking about censorship from a local government perspective now. I'm talking about books being banned from schools. So now that's when you talk about people don't read anymore, especially once they've left school. Most of the people in school are assigned to read The Grapes of Wrath. They're assigned to read whatever it might be. I'm blanking. The boys on the island. How am I not blanking?
Peter Pan.
No. No.
Oh. Well, it was a good guess.
It was a really good guess. Those are boys on an island. Oh, Lisa's looking at me like I've lost my head. I got lobs coming
boys
out of my ears.
Boys in the Trees. Oh, that was a Carly Simon
album. No. Anyway, where they all, you know, build their own society. What's, come on. I can't
Lord
believe
Lord of the Flies.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Sorry. Lord of the Flies is being banned. Don't you think that it's important that kids read Lord of the Flies, read To Kill a Mockingbird, read the novels from our past that expose our mistakes, our weaknesses, our soft white underbelly, so that we can understand where we came from, yeah, so we understand where we're going.
But Spike, see, here's the thing. They can't even teach actual history in the Texas public schools, and we're concerned about what gets in and out of a school library.
Well, that might be the only chance kids have to see what the outside world that their you know, uptight parents don't want them to see. And I know they can get it from a public library, not the school library, but we shouldn't have to make it harder for kids to be exposed to what the real world is actually all about. You know, we're not talking about smut. We're not talking about, I mean, some books aren't appropriate for certain ages. And that's a much more difficult debate to have. When a child is trying to figure out their own sexuality, and the only resources they have are certain books that speak to what they're going through in life, sometimes kids need to see these books against their parents' wishes. Because, you know, parents are antiquated in their point of view. They know the world they were raised in. They don't understand the world kids today are being raised in. And some, it's a tough conversation to have, but one I think worth having. I don't know why you picked this album tonight, but I am so glad you did. We'll be right back. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill, along with the very well-read Matthew Butler. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Oh, you know, I'm really looking forward to getting to the texting portion of our recap tonight, Matt, because some of the folks have been
words.
Fantastic. I know. You know, we're going to run another recorded hour from 9 to 10 from today's midday show, and I appreciate you guys' understanding and patience while we do that. Matt could do this all night long, tried doing it until 10 o'clock and for about a week when we first started doing the two shifts, and it's, you would not believe the difference it makes from 9 to 10 to get out of here and get some sleep. So, I wouldn't pass up the opportunity to work with Matt and do a live show and talk about the things that we want to talk about in the evenings at Cairo Nights. I appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts with you, the audience, and I appreciate the exercise of being my own guy. And right now, Jack Stein and I are doing 12 to 3, and we may get a chance to do that for a bit longer. We'll see how it plays out here at Cairo News Radio. I hope that that's the case. I enjoy doing it very much, but I enjoy doing this very much as well. Okay, that being said, when I first saw this headline, Matt, I was kind of dumbfounded. I couldn't quite figure out how this could be the case. The headline, of course, is a trailblazing Seattle detective files $10 million claim against Seattle Police Department for racial gender discrimination. A veteran of 43 years on the Seattle Police Department's police force, Detective Denise Cookie Bolden, famous, just had a chess park named in her honor. 43 years in Seattle Police Department, a staple of the community, an absolute treasure in the city of Seattle, and the Seattle Police Department's legacy. So this well-known Seattle Police Department detective filed a multi-million dollar claim against the city of Seattle, citing years of racism and gender discrimination. Cookie Bolden is known as a trailblazer. She's one of the first African-American women to join the Seattle Police Department in the 70s. She's well-known for her mission to connect the kids with connect with kids and communities of color. She's one of their own. I don't mean to be, you know, them and us thing, but you know, it was so hard in the day. It's still hard today. Imagine in the 70s when a young kid sees a police officer that looks just like them. You have no idea the value of defusing and de-escalation that provides. A new tort claim filed details numerous allegations of racial and gender discrimination that Bolden's attorney said had been going on for the entirety of her 43-year career, and she could no longer stay quiet. Cookie Bolden loves her job. She loves working as a Seattle police officer. She's dedicated to the children of her community and the people that find themselves in the city of Seattle. She's heartbroken that she's in a place where she feels that the only way there can be authentic change is to bring this action. That was according to James Bible, a civil rights attorney, former president of the Seattle NAACP, by the way, who's representing Detective Bolden. Bible said the Seattle Police Department would highlight her work with communities of color when there was a conflict, but behind the scenes, it put a target on his client's back, led to internal complaints about her relationship with the black community. The claim also points out how Bolden was made to feel uncomfortable in her workplace at the department's South Precinct. Bible points to racist and derogatory posters left in locker rooms, including one where a supervisor replaced the name of a wanted suspect on a bulletin with the name of another African-American Seattle police officer. The reality is that she's faced hostility from her coworkers, from her superiors, and she's encountered dynamic racism, said Bible. Now, you know, you can ask how after 43 years, you know, how did you stay if it was such a problem? How can you work 43 years in a job and then claim systemic career-long racism and sexual discrimination? But when you look at it, that was the price she felt she paid to be in that position to do that job, which she felt was more important than how she felt on a day-to-day-to-day basis. Talk about the ultimate sacrifice. It seems to me from the details in this story, there's a great story on King 5's website. There's a great story on MyNorthwest.com. You know, Cookie Bolden was doing the job because she cared about the people of the community. And part of doing that job was taking on the, you know, we talk about how we lived in a different time. The last story about how do we change the content of books? Do we go after old statues or things that were appropriate 50 years ago? They're no longer appropriate today. Well, you know, people could say, well, why didn't Cookie Bolden just leave the job? Well, because first off, she'd invested years and then decades in this job. Should she be forced to leave if the environment is unhealthy, unfair, discriminatory? No. You know, she has the choice, but that shouldn't be the only choice she has. She chose to work it through because the commitment she made to her community and the, more importantly, the children of that community was worth the price of the cost of doing business. But now that she's come to the end of her active career as a Seattle police detective, she's suing the city for $10 million. And I can honestly tell you that I don't know. Just my opinion. I don't think it's about the money. I believe her and her attorney when they say the only way to make effective change, authentic change, is to bring this story out in public. And the only way to do that is in the court system. So that's what they're doing. You know, the city has, I believe it's 60 days to respond to this filing. And if they decide not to pay the tort claim made against the city, a tort law is any time that you seek damages or seek compensation for damages incurred. Injury usually is what a tort claim is about. And she's asking for $10 million in compensation to bring in this story to light. If the city says, no, we don't agree, we're going to take it to court, then she has the right to sue the city on the same grounds, which I believe fully that her and her lawyers are prepared to do. I mean, you know, the city of Seattle's police department has had quite a number of problems over the years. We've had issues left, right, and center. You know, with one of the reasons that the public safety bills are being pushed through Olympia is because, you know, the city's reputation with its police department has been troubled. You know, they're getting to the point where you won't pull a car over for equipment failures because there was such a disproportionate result of communities of color being pulled over more so than white community drivers. I mean, the numbers bear it out to be true. It's not just an anecdote. It's an evidence-borne fact.
Have you ever asked yourself, Spike, why it is that people who say we should be so blindly trusting of the cops don't trust the results of elections?
Matt, I don't have time to dive into that depth of hypocrisy. If we can just quick sidebar that one, how come nobody who won an election is bitching about the results? You know, how come people who won elections down ticket are saying that the top of the ticket was rigged? Explain that one to me. If the Democrats were smart enough to rig an election, work with various voting machine companies to keep Donald Trump from office, how did Marjorie Taylor Greene get herself a seat in Congress? You know, I think a bigger national security issue is getting Marjorie Taylor Greene out of Congress. Last week she's out there, you know, did you hear about that bomb that was at the border that the cartels left? Well, I'm not allowed to comment, Madam Representative, on classified. I don't care about classified. People have right to know. Turns out it was a bag of sand and she's a moron. Oh, I'm sorry. The bomb was a bag of sand. She also is a bag of sand and a moron. You know, I don't care about classification. Well, that's nice to know. Let's get you off Homeland Security pretty quick.
Before you care about the rules of your own government that you wanted this job so bad to show up and like not follow any of the proper procedures or rules.
You know, before you tweet out something that that North Korea or China or Russia isn't supposed to know about our government because you know better because you used to run a CrossFit store and you slept with a few of your employees that ruined your marriage. So I guess you're an expert on what the public needs to know and deserves to know. I'm sorry. I was trying to be nice tonight. I almost made it, too. Boy, I almost made it. Getting back to the local story at hand, Detective Cookie Bolton, you know, you want to talk about a level of commitment and sacrifice. It's one thing to dedicate 43 years of your life to a profession that could end your life any day. To be a woman of color coming up in that arena since the 70s and to go to work every day and dedicate your life and your professional career to making your community and the kids of your community who are now the adults and parents of that community feel like they live in a safer, more inclusive, more understanding community. And now to find out that you've been doing it for 43 years with systemic discrimination and racism, I couldn't be prouder of this individual. And we'll see how this plays out. You know, believe me, it's not hard to prove a discrimination suit. I know somebody from this industry, from this building, who won a massive discrimination suit. It's not hard to prove. I mean, people these days, we live in a different world. You know, the barbershop my grandfather took me into to get my haircut when I was a little kid, one of the earliest memories I have is going to the Louis Barbershop in Baltimore, Maryland, getting my haircut. My grandpa took me down, sat the little man in the chair, put the apron on. That's the first place I ever saw pinups. I'm talking full-on centerfold calendar pinups. I loved going to Louis, get my haircut with my grandpa. Can't do that today. Shouldn't do that today. Don't make me woke. It makes me evolved. That's why my knuckles don't have any scars on them. I don't drag them on the ground anymore. It's Cairo Nights. Man, I've had a ball tonight. This has been a blast. When we come back, some of your texts, and they're worth it. Trust me, you'll want to hear some of this. It's Cairo Nights. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'll take this one first, Matt. Listen, we're not going to agree on everything, folks. I fully believe that. And I respect your points of view. Spike, you're getting too liberal again. Check yourself, please, from a loving friend. I can appreciate the input. I think speaking out against Marjorie Taylor Greene is probably the most conservative and Republican thing I've ever said. You think that the Republican Party wants to be represented by the likes of George Santos, Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Paul Gosar? You think that's who the Republican Party wants to be as the face of their party?
Well, it's who they've got.
Well,
and someone opened the door for that.
Well, I know. You're right. You're totally right. When I say someone is unfit to serve, I don't look at the letter behind their name. Look at the garbage coming out of their mouth. Anyway, listen, I appreciate it. See, that's why I sometimes I wait till the end to speak to the text line. And it's been wonderful tonight. You guys have had tremendously valuable input to the show. And it seems, Matt, no matter what we do, when we get to talk politics, we're so entrenched to our side that we just can't see eye to eye on stuff. We talked about happy songs and happy shiny people. Where Shiny Happy People was a sarcastic song. Good Day Sunshine is a very good happy song. There are good happy songs.
I'm just saying they're harder to write.
No, they're totally harder to. Yeah, that is what you said. That is exactly what you said. And they are. Speaking of your choice of rumors tonight, talk about misery making art. Good gravy. We talked about the Irish jokes that Jimmy Kimmel made at the Oscars about how there are 5 nominees from Ireland, which means there's much likely more likely to have a fight on stage tonight. And, you know, you're not going to make that joke about a Jewish actor. You're not going to make that joke about an African-American actor. But by all means, have fun at the Irish. We're too drunk to get up and defend ourselves. Hi, we can do that because I'm Irish. Liam, a texter wrote, Liam Neeson to Jimmy Kimmel, I have a very special skill set to make sequel films that overstay their welcome. He totally does. let me see here. Is the Irish, Liam Neeson said those were racist jokes. Irish isn't a race. Maybe, you know, pasty white ginger freckled is actually a race. I think the Irish are more of an ethnicity. I could be wrong. I'm not a biologist. Pretty sad if these college student spring breakers represent our nation's future. Amen to that. This is just self-indulgent, irresponsible behavior. Kids will be kids. Well, I wish parents would be parents. I added the last part of that. But I couldn't agree with you more, Richard. This isn't kids being kids. It's kids being poorly raised and the consequence being inflicted on the rest of us. Oh, we talked about the Lusty Lady and how it's been purchased. And maybe the guy who purchased it, a internet adult entertainment mogul, will keep that little jewel of the city in the shape that we all remember and love. And Ryan in Tacoma wanted to know, were they safe to be on the street with some of their signs? Or did the city have to pay a fine sometimes for their messaging? I think there was an unspoken agreement with the city that they would never go too far, just to the edge. You could see too far poking through their shirt, but they never showed you what too far really looked like. You know what I'm saying? A texter said, when the art museum was under construction, when SAM, Seattle Art Museum, was under construction, the weather turned really cold, and the contractor who was doing the ironwork had to stop. And the marquee said, can't get up in the cold, guys? I love it. That's just gold. That's just gold. Oh, Spike. Somebody said, how about the PSA about the dangers of the Borg? That's a new trend. Blackout rage gallon. You take like alcohol and like power drinks, like electrolyte drinks, and a gallon jug, and they consume it in one person. What did Jack mention that drinking game? Was it Edward 40 Hands? Where they taped a 40-ounce malt beverage to each of your hands, and you couldn't put them down until they were empty. Yeah. I guess it's not just the latest wave of spring breakers. I guess we've been morons for a long time. Oh, there was a power outage in Arlington, but it's back on. Thank you, Sean. I apologize for not mentioning that sooner. I'm sorry I missed that the first time. Power is back on in Arlington. Always good to hear. I know not every song Matt played was from Rumors. I'll give you that, but he has. But got a lot of music to play here tonight. The guy's doing a great job. Leave him alone. Authors shouldn't even have to think about changing their work. And I agree with that. Let's put a disclaimer. You know what? You're gentle. This might be tough on your psyche. Read on. We'll all be better if you do. Thanks for being a part of the show tonight. We'll be back tomorrow night. Cairo Nights. Spike O'Neill, Matt Butler.